Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Sons of Gunn, a podcast about the DC Universe. I'm Alex Gunn.
I'm Justin Gunn, a gun.
Yeah, we're both guns, and we related to a guy named Gunn, who is our father, who we can't reveal for legal reasons, but yeah. We're going to talk about some news about the DC Universe. If you've got tips, stories you want us to cover, you can always email us at comicbookclublive@gmail.com or hit us up on any social network. We'd love to hear from you. But we got a bunch of stuff to talk about this week, including news that came out of San Diego Comic-Con. Big one that's unrelated, but this came out right before, despite movies, of course, because of the strikes, SAG strike, WGA strike, support both of those strikes. But they had no presence at Comic-Con. Regardless, there was a big article that came out about Aquaman 2 right before revealing a bunch of information about the movie. But the biggest thing that I think people were responding to is it was already spiraling over $200 million. And then, like The Flash, over the course of three regimes at Warner Brothers, they've gone through three rounds of reshoots for the movies. According to the article, there were a lot of bad test audiences. We had already kind of heard rumors about this for a while, but that they weren't getting great scores, and then they reshot stuff in the movie and got even worse test scores, and then reshot more things in the movie. And mind you, there's stuff like they had Michael Keaton as Batman, and then that got cut out because they didn't know what the future of that is. And then they had Ben Affleck as Batman, and that got cut out because he's clearly not going to be Batman going forward. So lots of stuff going on here. I don't know if you checked out this report, but I'm curious to hear your reaction.
I mean, it's just ironic that the Aquaman movie is drowning. It's just absolutely underwater in every way possible.
And it's like, about to be swimming with the fishes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Aquaman normally likes, but in this case, I think it's bad. Mm-hmm. It's also like, I feel like this movie has a panicked version of senioritis, where it's like, hey, we're sort of the last one coming out the door before the shop closes and under new management takes over. So it's like, just the fact that it's becoming such an albatross for them is awful. It's bad. It's very awful.
Yeah, it's a bad situation. It's also a surprising situation. For the sake of clarity, and not to speak for you, but our third podcast host, Pete, loved Aquaman. I think both you and I were like, eh, on
did
it. Did not like it. But it made well over $1 billion. It is the highest, I believe, the highest grossing DC movie ever, something like that, which is wild. So they should have been easily set up for doing a sequel, knocking it out of the park. Clearly, whatever our two thoughts are, people love this movie. And the fact that there have been so many stumbles along the way is shocking to me. It's surprising that it is headed in this direction. And like you said, you know, we'll see how Blue Beetle does. I'm pretty bullish on, I think that movie is going to do better than people expect, even though it's not going to like crush it. It's not going to do Barbie numbers or anything like that. But Aquaman 2, at this point, it seems like it is headed to be an utter disaster at the end of the year. And it'll only be through some sort of Jason Momoa magic that it actually performs in any particular fashion.
Well, and I would argue the first one was spent a lot of that Momoa magic there. So, like, this one is – that first one was such a messy, classically, overly complex superhero movie that was just crushing under the weight of all the set pieces they had to string together with, like, a plot that I don't think was all that great. But the fact that it was successful, I don't think was a testament to the movie. I think it was the timing. It was right in that, and Momoa, it was in that time when everyone was like, I'll see every superhero movie. And we're past that now. So I don't know if the magic will hold for this.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. Like, it hit at the exact perfect moment where everybody would go to everything. There has been some talk. So partially because of the strike, the AMTP, AMTP, AMPTP. I forgot a P in there.
AMPTP LePage.
They love to pee and they smell like pee. They are, a lot of the movie studios are mulling over moving some of their big tentpole releases because they're worried that the strikes are going to drag on for a while. They're certainly using this, in my mind at least, partially as a tactic to be like, nope, we got content forever. Strike as long as you want. We'll move Dune 2 to next year. We're all good. They're definitely not all good to me. That reads as panic. But there was, I read some talk of like moving Aquaman 2 to be a tentpole next year, which is the worst idea. They should put that movie out right today and then move on whatever it does.
Well, I think a lot of the moving of the movies is about promotion, like having the actors giving out their stumping for the movies. I agree with you. Aquaman is one of those movies that like, it is what it is. You know, it's sort of Jason Momoa. It helps to have him out there, but it really just, it's more about seeing him on screen. So just run the shit out of that trailer, eat your vegetables and put it out and stop dragging out the end of this lame duck regime that we have here.
They just did, according to the report, another 4 days, I believe, of reshoots, which, mind you, they said from the studio perspective, they're very happy with, but this is kind of the same thing they did with The Flash. They just kept shooting and shooting and shooting. And there's a certain point, you're not, if the bones of the movie aren't there, it's just not going to work. So what you do is either scrap it, I guess, is the world we live in, and take the tax breaks, or put it out there and, like you're saying, eat your vegetables. And frankly, I think they should do the latter. Move the date up. Put it out sooner so that you can space it away from DCU. You can get the stink off of there, and then we can move on to the next thing.
I mean, there are a couple different kinds of reshoots. There's like internal research reshoots where you're like, ah, this part's not working. Let's cut it and try to find a way to string these two ideas together. Those are really hard to pull off without it coming across, about being obvious in the story. The better version is what they did on World War Z, where they were like, you know what, this big battle we shot and spent a fortune on isn't working as a conclusion. Let's take out this whole chunk and shoot a whole new chunk that will replace it. Because then you're actually going there. And that movie helped because it was sort of anthologized a little bit. So that was easier. But like going big that way and sort of redoing a whole part of the story lets you not look like you blew it and are putting a Band-Aid on a problem.
We're definitely going to talk about another kind of reshoot thing later on in the podcast, but why don't we move on to a more positive story? This is one that came out of Comic-Con. Jim Lee revealed that the trade collections that are tied into storylines that James Gunn is utilizing, referencing, or et cetera, for his new DCU. He didn't give specific numbers on this, but he said that they have seen double or triple the sales of people picking this up, including The Authority, I believe, was out of print and is now back in print just because James Gunn said, hey, we're doing it as a movie. As a comic book fan, that's awesome. I love it.
Well, and I think as James Gunn or anyone who works at Warner Brothers, they got to be psyched for this because it means there is still an enthusiastic fan base who will spend money on the DCU after how they've squandered so much of that in the last year of movie releases. So that's good for everybody, I think. And what a great way. Every now superhero movie is going to have the required reading list, I feel like. And it's great because I think it actually helps with the fans and people going into the movies to be like, I see this story. It energizes the base.
Not to slam one person to one company to build up another company, but DC has been really, and Warner Brothers has been really good about this. I wish they would do this in the theatrical trailers, but at least for the online trailers, they've pretty consistently been having a title card at the end, which is like this trailer, here's three books you can pick up to find out more about Blue Beetle or The Flash or whatever that may have inspired this movie in some way, which is great, versus Marvel, which is like, hey, you know that scene on TV? There's a QR code behind that dude that you're not caring about. If you scan the QR code, it'll take you to one free comic, which, cool, mind you, but not the most obvious thing in the entire world. So, I don't know.
No, like, and not what people actually do.
Yeah, I always sit there with my phone just in case there's QR codes. Yeah. In everything. Zap. So far, every episode of SVU has not had one, but fingers crossed, we'll see.
Yeah, they're going to throw one on Marisha Hargitay's cheek. You're going to really love it.
All right, next one. This may be considered a bit of a spoiler, except for the fact that the official Blue Beetle account put it up on Twitter. So if you don't want a spoiler for Blue Beetle, tune out for the next 3 minutes or so. But we got to see in the most recent trailer, there was a big red Blue Beetle looking dude that was attacking him, seems to be one of the villains of the movie. They reference in this quick clip that they put on Twitter that the character seems to be called OMAC, which is One Man Army Corps, I believe, is the idea there. Classic DC character, seen a lot of different iterations, is somewhat tied to Blue Beetle in the comics, or at least it was tied together in certain ways. Cool. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, cool. Did it. I've never liked OMAC in the comics. Mm-hmm. It always feels like it's not – they don't quite a little underbaked. It feels like, let's just do OMAC. It's like the Royal Flush Gang being the villain in every, like, new series launched at DC. But the one thing that's cool about it, I think, is some iterations have OMAC be sort of spread like a virus, mm-hmm. and anyone in the hero's life can become an OMAC. So that's cool. That could be a nice way of – the theme of this Blue Beetle movie feels like he's like, I have these powers. I don't know what I'm doing, but I have to be good at it immediately. To have it him be immediately plagued by the people in his life turning on him in a big robot fashion, I think could be fun.
Totally agree with that. And also going with the potential theme of like he is a – he's essentially set up Blue Beetle as like a villain, right? Like that's what he's supposed to be according to the Scarab, but instead he turns it into being a hero and he's an individual in that way. So to have something that's the opposite there that potentially spreads and infects a lot of people and makes them very samey, that could be cool. We'll see if that happens. It also ties into another weird DC villain potentially called Brother Eye, who's this big evil satellite in the eye, in the sky, excuse me. So we'll see if that happens. It could just be... Yeah. Hey, this is a dude in armor that we called OMAC. We'll find out soon enough.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Moving over to the Joker 2, Lady Gaga insisted on being called Lee on the set and wouldn't respond to her own name, according to somebody who worked on the set. I know this is a thing that actors do. To me, I think it's a stupid thing that actors do.
Well, I don't know why people do it. I mean, is it a – are they worried they're going to fall out of character or something, so they demand to be called this? I mean – what's the other name we expect to hear called? Lady Gaga?
Because well, Stephanie. Stephanie is her actual name.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, how would you like to be? I'm only answering to Lee. It's like, okay, whatever.
I assume it's short for Harley Quinn is probably the idea there. Maybe she's called Lee in the movie or something like that. But like... I don't know, man. That's your job. Your job is when they call action, you pretend for a little while and you do that like 5 to 10 times in a row. Like, I understand needing a moment to get into character and prep for that, but that sort of behavior, I think it's annoying. I think it's an annoying thing to do. Be a person on set, talk to the people, and don't like be like, no, I'm always Lee.
Well, it's like in Lincoln, they had to do all these extra like loop-de-loops to be like, hey, come to set. The candle box is lit, and it's like the monitor that they're watching or whatever, and to have all this, like, it's just like, yeah, what? How much play acting are we doing on this set?
Yeah. I don't know. Obviously, we're not method actors. Why don't we turn to a couple of other things? We got two news items here about The Flash as more movie. It's now on digital very quickly. We talked about this, I think, last week. So there's a bunch of deleted scenes and interviews that are happening around that. One, there's a big question about who the Jay Garrick cameo was in The Flash. Everybody was wondering
about it. Jay Garrick. Great spinoff opportunity.
Well, so the question about it was, it looked like in a weird way that it was Teddy Sears who played a version of The Flash on the TV show The Flash, and everybody was confused why they're like, why wouldn't you just get Grant Gustin who played The Flash or John Wesley Shipp or something like that? Why get Teddy Sears, the people that even people who watch the CW show need to be like, oh yeah, he was fast too. I remember that. It wasn't him. And then it was said that, oh, it was just a random stuntman or something like that. But what actually came out through an interview is it wasn't any of that. It was one of the film's editors, when they realized, oh, to create a fully digital person is going to look bad, is what they said. So instead they wanted to have a real face. And they said, okay, who wants to do it? And one of the film's editors was like, oh, me, make me Jay Garrick. So that's how that happened.
That's insane.
Yes.
That's truly to have, especially like, I mean, I wouldn't say he's the biggest fan favorite character, but there's a Jay Garrick fan base. Mm-hmm. Like, you can hear sometimes in like commercials, an editor will do like a voiceover track to be like, "That's we actually like that. We're going to go with it rather than hiring an actor to do it." But to do this on a named DCU character, it is like, yeah, have the editor do it. Anybody's cousins want to come through and be a Superman or something?
Well, not to take this too far or anything, and I know some people like the movie, but to me, this points to the overall sloppiness of how this movie was put together. The fact that, frankly, you have a whole sequence that looks like utter shit anyway, and the CGI characters look terrible. You're digging up Christopher Reeve's corpse to put him on screen. So, like, what are we doing here anyway?
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry. And, like, digital Nicolas Cage, a reference that only people deep in the history of DC lore get in any way. Anyway, so to like at that point, how little care is there that they're just like, yeah, put any, like you're saying, put any random dude in there. Instead, do Teddy Sears, do Grant Gustin, please just get John Wesley Shipp. He's a great guy. He'll do literally anything. Like, at least that's the point here, is that we recognize all these random things from the multiverse. Why have one glaring thing that you focus even a second on that people are like, who's that? What's going on here that takes you out of the film?
Well, I think it goes also to, like, they must have been so underwater, just like Aquaman, when it comes to budget. They were like, we are not paying anyone else to be in this movie, depending on when in the process they put this together. So it was like, hey, yeah, you want to do it? We pay you nothing? Great. Get in there. You're Jay Garrick. Congrats.
Yeah. Here's another thing that I was kind of stunned by when I initially heard about this. Was angry, and then I watched it and I got annoyed in a different way. So a deleted scene from The Flash was revealed, and Andy Muschietti, who's the director, also talked about the context for this. In the scene, this takes place in the plane where they're flying to rescue who they think is Superman, but ultimately turns out to be Supergirl. That was Superwoman, whichever. Sasha Kalyai. The two Ezra Millers, except not Ezra Miller because they use the stuntman who doubles him for him in the scene, are talking about and speculating about Batman. And what comes out over the course of the scene is, whether this is true or not, the world believes that Batman quit because he killed a criminal in front of a kid. And Andy Muschietti confirmed this. This is actually what happened in the continuity of the movie. Batman Michael Keaton quit because he killed somebody in front of a kid, realized that was his origin. That's what the traumatic thing that happened to him. He felt like he couldn't be Batman anymore. And further, the two Flashes speculate, wait, they say this literally, like, wait, the reason he probably is so into time travel and knows so much about time travel is because he wanted to try to go back and change this. So the reason he is on this, like, this all happens in this 1 minute scene. The reason he's on this journey with us is he wants to right these wrongs and he wants to make amends for this. And I was like, oh, okay. You put his entire motivation and all the explanation for everything that's going on with Batman in a deleted scene that you cut out of the movie. That's crazy.
That is crazy in a number of ways, because it is true. Like, he, the whole spaghetti analogy, it's like this guy's deep into time travel talk if he's got a food based in the moment analogy for it. So the fact that he, the idea that Batman, because like he killed, is it a criminal who's that child's parent? Is that the idea? Because killing anyone in front of a kid doesn't quite track with the origin of Batman.
Sure.
Batman didn't see a random act. It was his parents that died. So I don't know. I don't want to get criticized the criticism too hard. But yes, to cut out that in a movie that was – you could have cut out something else and put that very important scene back in there.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think the thing that was initially distasteful to me was the idea of Batman ever killing somebody that just doesn't track, you know, at all. But you already have that in the movie. At least that explains several things that felt otherwise like huge, weird plot holes that were sticking with me while I was watching it. So, oh, well, maybe it'll be The Flash, the ultimate cut at some point.
I don't think so.
No, you don't think they're going to put money into that? Release?
No, the editor's too busy. He can't edit. He has to go be Jay Garrick.
Yeah, he's running. He's running everywhere, baby. Running. Last but not least, this was another announcement that came out of San Diego Comic-Con in lieu of movies. Comics and animation took over, which is great, I think. And yeah. One of the announcements was we are still going to get these DC direct-to-digital, direct-to-DVD, Blu-ray animated movies. Two of the ones that are coming out next year are going to be Justice League, Crisis on Infinite Earths, and Watchmen, which now has been, I think, adapted into animation at least two different times. So it was wild to me to hear that.
Yeah, and I don't know what the take is. Like, what are we doing? Is it just another very faithful adaptation? Like, we've done that. Because I could get if there was, like, someone did a Watchmen movie and it wasn't like the comic. Mm-hmm. You'd be like, okay, let's do a faithful one for all the hardcore fans out there. But we got the Zack Snyder Watchmen is like right there. Mm-hmm. So what's the move here?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is, to be frank, I know people like these. I know people enjoy these. But this is one of my issues with a lot of these animated movies is they're adapting things that are so based in the art and the structure of the comic books. Why does this thing exist other than to continue to bring out the IP or something like that? Like, what is the story we're telling? Why are we doing this differently? The HBO Watchmen show, whatever you think of it, definitely had a take. Like, it had a very strong take, and it went for it, and it had a reason for being and for the title Watchmen. I guess we'll see. I mean, maybe it will take some sort of different riff. Frankly, in animation, I would rather at this point see them do the before Watchmen stuff, like the little mini series that they did through DC, than an actual Watchmen adaptation. But I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. Because to your point, like between the Watchmen movie and then the Watchmen TV series, they've done sort of the two poles of like extremely faithful an extremely thoughtful, innovative adaptation and pushing the story forward. So this, I feel like, is going to be somewhere in the middle no matter what.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice if it carved out some new ground.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Again, it's the pirate stuff.
It could be. They did that. They did animated Tales from the Black Freighter. So go back and watch that. Got tips, stories you want us to cover? Email us at comicbookclublive@gmail.com. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We love to chat with you about the DC Universe. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok, and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, Dad, you got a lot of stuff going on, but you got to figure out the strike shit.
Yeah.